Bitcoin's decentralized digital cash did not emerge from Y Combinator, but rather was the holy grail of the cypherpunks, a group of civil liberties advocates concerned about how personal freedoms could survive the great electronic transformation of society. Their goals were to separate money from governments and corporations, check the growth of the global surveillance state, and preserve human rights in an increasingly digital age. Satoshi Nakamoto's greatest trick was to animate these aspirations into something that looks like and functions as digital gold. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I'm Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than everybody else you know. And if you guys are the ones that listen to this on 1.5x, 2x, or 3x, whatever it is, you're listening like I'm at an auction here and I'm just blabbering off, you need to take a minute every once in a while. You need to go back and listen to the intro music because it's just awesome. It gets me jacked up every time. But we are starting off the week with another Gladstein piece, Alex Gladstein, and another from Bitcoin Magazine, of course. And this one is an awesome piece about how the NGU technology, the number go up technology, is actually a facade on Bitcoin's Freedom Go Up Foundation. The powers that be, the authorities of the current financial system, will adopt Bitcoin for their own self-interest, while unknowingly supporting the very security and the foundation of a system that will grant freedom to so many others who would never have that potential otherwise. And I think we got a fun guy's take after this one as well. So stick around after the break for why Lightning and Taproot are further improvements in the future will help drive this Trojan horse effect. Thanks to Swan Bitcoin for the automatic Bitcoin savings plan. I have a weekly buy, but you can buy every week, every day, monthly, whatever tickles your fancy. And you do it with the lowest auto buy fees in the business. And you can smash buy on the dips like this lovely dip we have been graced with today. SwanBitcoin.com/guy for $10 in free sats. And then you got to move them to your own keys. You got to stack them in your digital fortress of freedom with the open source Bitbox O2 hardware wallet. It's got an ergonomic design, easy to set up, easy backup, easy to use. It is just a great way to protect your keys. Huge fan of their wallet, and guyswan.com/bitbox will get you more info, take you straight to the website, and get you 5% off. With that, let's get into today's read, and it is titled, Bitcoin is a Trojan Horse for Freedom, by Alex Gladstein. While Bitcoin is powerful number-go-up technology that appeals to self-interest, it's also creating fortresses against authority in cyberspace. In Book 2 of Virgil's epic poem The Aeneid, one of the most iconic plot lines of classical mythology unfolds with trickery and subterfuge. The Greek forces, having failed to capture the city of Troy after a decade-long siege, attempt an ultimate attack on their enemy, not by strength, but by guile, through a clever plan hatched by Ulysses. In the fields outside of Troy's impregnable walls, the Greek army departs, but leaves behind a massive wooden horse. A lone remaining soldier leads the Trojans to believe that the horse is a tribute to Minerva, the goddess of war and strategy, and is an apology for the blood that the Greeks spilled. The Trojans think their rival has sailed off in surrender. And despite warnings from Cassandra and Laocoon, who gives us the famous saying, "Beware of Greeks bearing gifts," they bring the horse into the city as a trophy of victory. Blinded by zeal, they think it will make them invincible. Little do they know, the horse is packed with armed soldiers, who, under cover of night, slip out and open the gates for their comrades waiting outside, who had hidden their fleet behind an island in the nearby sea. The Greeks sack the city, and Troy falls, defeated from the inside by its new treasure. Thousands of years later, the Trojan horse has been popularized in computer science as a malicious program disguised as a helpful update. But it is also an effective metaphor for how Bitcoin stealthily co-opts actors who do not care about or do not like freedom to promote it anyway. The meme begins with wealthy individuals, corporations, and soon governments, which see Bitcoin as glittering digital gold. Out of self-preservation and greed, they are incentivized to buy, mine, or one day tax this new prize to accumulate the soundest money and gain an advantage over their rivals. Bitcoin does, after all, on its exterior, look very appealing. It is the best performing financial asset in the world over the past 12 years. Bitcoin's trillion-dollar success is attracting interest from the rich and powerful everywhere, from Wall Street to Beijing to Silicon Valley. In the last year, Bitcoin FOMO has seeped into the minds of professional investors, corporate treasury managers, and even sovereign wealth funds who do not want to get left behind. As a recent Bloomberg headline announced, quote, "Bitcoin is displacing gold as an inflation hedge." The article shows how value is demonstrably flowing out of gold and into Bitcoin. Companies like Tesla and Square star among a growing group of dozens adding the new currency to their balance sheets. NYDIG is introducing the multi-trillion-dollar insurance industry to Bitcoin as a hedge against declining yields. As MicroStrategy CEO Michael Saylor says, "Bitcoin is the hardest money and acts over time like a one-way street. Just as no Argentine wants to cash out their US dollars back into pesos, ultimately few will want to cash out their Bitcoin back into dollars." It is early days now, but it is hard to overstate the eventual impact that Bitcoin will have not just on the $10 trillion gold market, but the $20 trillion art and collectible market, the $100 trillion stock market, the $225 trillion real estate market, and the $250 trillion bond market over the coming decades. But Bitcoin is not just number-go-up technology. Hidden behind the eye-popping gains is a powerful freedom-go-up technology that its new adopters are knowingly or not pushing forward. NGU and FGU are inextricable. Bitcoin's decentralized digital cash did not emerge from Y Combinator, but rather was the holy grail of the cypherpunks, a group of civil liberties advocates concerned about how personal freedoms could survive the great electronic transformation of society. Their goals were to separate money from governments and corporations, check the growth of the global surveillance state, and preserve human rights in an increasingly digital age. Satoshi Nakamoto's greatest trick was to animate these aspirations into something that looks like and functions as digital gold. So while, yes, Bitcoin gives anyone, regardless of their nationality, status, wealth, gender, race, or beliefs, access to the best savings technology on the planet, it also gives them unstoppable, programmable money that cannot be debased or censored, and that fights surveillance and confiscation. Dissidents, democracy protesters, opposition leaders, and independent journalists worldwide are beginning to realize this, from Minsk to Lagos, to Los Angeles to Buenos Aires. World leaders speak pretty words about human rights, but when they get down to brass tacks, the platitudes are swept aside. As a reminder of this cold reality, refer to the dictators on the UN, quote, Human Rights Council, or the Financial Action Task Force. The list of household corporate names sponsoring the 2022 Genocide Olympics, or the roster of Wall Street icons who attended Saudi Arabia's Davos in the desert. As human rights activists know well, it can be hard to effectively promote freedom in a society that willingly sells morals out for profit. Bitcoin sneaks in and rewires the system from the inside, aligning profit-seeking with permissionless financial liberation. But who conjured this horse and dragged it to the city gates? This time, it was not a plotting army camped outside Wall Street. Satoshi's creation spreads not by force, but by voluntary choice. The financial establishment is simply beginning to like the way it looks. It promises great riches, and that is no mirage. It will continue to deliver. But most of the elites do not realize what they are bringing into the inner sanctum. In a world of increasingly centralized control and social engineering, Bitcoin provides a check by empowering the individual at the expense of the authority. Yes, billionaires and dictators can buy a lot of Bitcoin, but they cannot control the system as they can with fiat money. Unlike with the dollar, euro, or yuan model, they cannot tweak issuance, censor transactions, make special rules or bailouts for the aristocracy, or perform mass remote confiscation or debasement. Of course, governments and corporations will try to hijack Bitcoin for their own ends. Some already have. The Block Size War is a book that chronicles the attempts of Chinese billionaires and Silicon Valley titans to forcibly transform Bitcoin from a freedom tool into a retail payments mechanism. These attempts failed because the network lacks a single point of control. And Bitcoin is more clever than any Trojan horse that Virgil or Homer could have imagined. In this plotline, each individual can custody their Bitcoin by moving it to an address they control with a set of digital keys. Unlike in 1933, when the US government was able to seize the gold of citizens with Executive Order 6102 by attacking points of custody, that does not work if hundreds of thousands or even millions of Americans are holding their keys. The adoption process is creating millions of new fortresses in cyberspace, all more secure than Troy. The ancient Greeks and Romans would appreciate the irony of megacorps and governments willingly and even enthusiastically letting the one thing that can erode their growing power into their city gates. Number go up is one hell of a drug. In some ways, Bitcoin has succeeded so far by hiding behind its strangeness. Just as the Trojans were baffled by the monstrous horse standing outside their city gates, the establishment has balked at Bitcoin. It has gone from $0 to $60,000, with most people on Earth not batting an eye. Less than 2% of humans have adopted it, but more than that, it seems, have mocked it. Even today, in April 2021, virtually all top economists, political scientists, diplomats, and central bankers still dismiss Bitcoin as something that will not work or is not worth their time. This dismissal has allowed Bitcoin to grow largely unfettered, and now the horse has been rolled inside the city. What the Davos establishment thought was just NGU technology was also FGU technology. This alignment of incentives is sorely needed in a world that depends too often on altruism and empathy. Take the global struggle for human rights. The international business community mostly overlooks the Chinese Communist Party's Uyghur gulags, subjugation of Hong Kong, staggering surveillance state, and colonialization of Tibet. In this scenario, self-interest and freedom are in conflict. To save profits, companies, celebrities, athletes, and heads of state sacrifice morals and either cave to Beijing's demands or keep silent about its brutality. Even philanthropists are failing on freedom. The effective altruism movement, for example, completely ignores civil liberties. With Bitcoin, self-interest and freedom are aligned. Even if one has zero altruism as one buys or mines Bitcoin, they drive up the network's security model and make a more robust freedom tool for everyone else. Refreshingly, Bitcoin does not care about one's intentions. It enables greater liberty and empowerment, not by some ambitious humanitarianism, but by each participant's honest self-preservation. And this dynamic continues to expand. For instance, Bitcoin exchanges today are not adopting the Lightning Network for privacy reasons. They are adopting it to reduce fees. But they are spreading the freedom tech anyway as they popularize a way to transact off-chain on an onion-routed second layer. On the horizon, a Bitcoin upgrade called Cross-Input Signature Aggregation, or SIGAG for short, could incentivize exchanges to engage in collaborative spins, which would fluster the surveillance state. Again, corporations will not push this privacy improvement for moral reasons, but to improve their bottom line. This is Bitcoin's game theory, transforming greed into freedom. Tesla stacking Bitcoin does not just help Tesla. It increases Bitcoin's global network effect, driving up the interest and the price, attracting more developers and improving UX, increasing the number of miners and strengthening network security, and multiplying new hodlers in a giant positive feedback loop. To recap, Bitcoin will continue to gain worldwide adoption because of its effectiveness as digital gold. But hidden within the prized Trojan horse is a remarkable freedom technology. At this point, the reader may think Bitcoin proponents must be saying, "Quiet in the back, keep the noise down. We just need to last a few more hours until midnight, and then we can pop ourselves out of this horse and let the rest of our army into Troy." But it is already too late. There is nothing the Trojans can do. Authoritarian regimes will inevitably want to stack sats. Some already have found Bitcoin a helpful tool to escape sanctions, including Venezuela, Iran, and North Korea. But over time, the officials tasked with storing and spending the Bitcoin will learn what it is: money the government cannot control. And they will share that knowledge with others, trickling it down through society. Just like Trojan horse computer viruses, Bitcoin will infect authoritarian regimes, appearing helpful at first, but proving debilitating over time. Some miss this and misinterpret the Trojan horse allegory. A small but influential chorus of American critics say Bitcoin is an enemy of a free society like the United States, and that it is unpatriotic and even treasonous. In reality, Bitcoin will be a lot more difficult for authoritarian closed societies like China to deal with than open ones like America. We already have property rights, checks and balances, and free speech, all values that Bitcoin reinforces. But these three things are diametrically opposed to what the Chinese Communist Party is trying to achieve. Bitcoin will, over time, erode the control that tyrannies like the CCP have over their citizens. And given that Bitcoin checks arbitrary power and the surveillance state, it may help steer open societies in a better direction, too. Today, tens of millions of people already own Bitcoin. They are happy about the value it gives and the value it will continue to provide. They own a piece of digital real estate on a board that cannot be expanded. But most do not read the fine print. They do not see the newspaper headline buried in the Genesis block, or notice details like Satoshi Nakamoto's chosen birth date, or study the history of the cypherpunks. At its core, Bitcoin was built to break us free from the existing system. It is the red pill, and all adopters are going to play a part in the revolution, whether they want to or not. Many authoritarians may already realize what is concealed in Bitcoin's Trojan horse. There are plenty of Laocoons and Cassandras saying, "We need to stop this thing." But just like in the kingdoms of lore, these words will fall on deaf ears. The prize glitters too brightly. A quick break for our sponsor, and let's jump into a guy's take. Do you know the best way to stack your Trojan horse freedom coins? automatically and for always with swanbitcoin.com. You start buying Bitcoin with whatever you can afford in your paycheck or whatever your fiat income is. Do you have Netflix? You should go ahead and cancel it and add it to your automatic stack. Do you go out and do stuff? Stop it. Stack sats instead. Do you order coffee out? Maybe you should make your own and add it to your Swan stack. This is the way. Invest in freedom by stacking Bitcoin with swanbitcoin.com/guy, and you get $10 free in sats to start you off. And it is spelled exactly like it sounds, but since I know that about 40% of my listeners are illiterate, it's swanbitcoin.com/GUI. I know it's difficult, but if you just hit that little back button and listen to it again, type that into your browser and you'll get right where you need to go. There's an important lesson in exactly how Bitcoin is a Trojan horse for freedom. And more specifically, in how the game theory works, how it is that Bitcoin brings freedom and prosperity to the entire system, agnostic to the beliefs or intentions of any of the individuals that adopt it. Hundreds of millions will buy into Bitcoin for greedy, selfish, or just stupid reasons, but they will fulfill the ultimate end game of Bitcoin's game theory nonetheless. And kind of in the wake of Elon's public foolishness, it cannot be stressed enough, because a lot of people have seemed to be losing sight of something, is that if Bitcoin was only ever going to work, if everyone understood it or believed in it, then it was never going to work. It does not need anyone's approval. It does not need anyone to back it. It will operate on its own, it will adjust on its own, and it will continue to do what it does and become more and more scarce and more secure as time goes on, irrelevant of how many stupid personalities dump on it for whatever reason they perceive it's bad or not good enough today. All it has to do is keep working. So many people misunderstand this, and they fall into that old way of thinking that Bitcoin is controlled by as soon as the corporations or Wall Street or the banks or the government get involved, well, then that's it, the gig's up. I mean, literally, I've seen people say that because Wells Fargo is now offering Bitcoin to their investors and their customers, it's like, oh, well, now Wells Fargo controls Bitcoin. It's like, what are you talking about? How did you ever expect, how did you think that we were going to have an open, permissionless, decentralized money and banks weren't going to get involved? What does it look like if banks got involved and weren't controlling it? What does Wells Fargo do that has prevented me, or JP Morgan or whoever, that's prevented me from running a node? That has prevented me from knowing 100% that my money is not corrupted in any way, shape, or form? That has inflicted damage or stopped me from being able to use my Lightning node? Or has harmed my privacy? Or has somehow in any way inhibited my keys' ability to protect my coins? It's just really hard for people to break out of that mindset that, well, Wall Street's involved now, so they run the show. What do they run? What do they run? What are they controlling? I think this is just people unable or having a very difficult time picturing something that is truly decentralized, that does not have a leader, that does not have an owner. I think, you know, this is a lot of what happened with, you know, this was even something that we saw in the block size war, you know, is that like when the users stopped the fork from happening, stopped the hard fork from happening, is that, well, this meant for the big blockers that Blockstream controlled Bitcoin. And they just could not wrap their heads around the fact that there wasn't a leader, that it just wasn't in their realm of possibility that, you know, Roger Ver was the leader, quote unquote, of BCH, and Craig Wright is the quote-unquote leader of Bitcoin Satoshi's vision. And it used to be Satoshi and then Gavin and then Core that controlled, quote-unquote, controlled Bitcoin. And then it was Blockstream when things didn't work out. When they didn't get what they wanted, it was because the wrong people controlled it. And it never entered their ability to imagine that it was simply that no one was controlling it. And because of their lack of control, they simply weren't able to enforce the change that they wanted. Because what quote-unquote controlled Bitcoin was the shelling point, was the current consensus rules and the reluctance of a majority of the users to break those rules for seemingly unimportant and short-term decisions. It was not that someone else controlled Bitcoin, it was that they didn't control Bitcoin. And this will come up again and again, this difficulty to imagine and really understand something that is truly independent and that continues to be. When a new big bank comes in and they're highly involved, or some government comes in and they co-opt mining and they try to make it quote-unquote legitimized, people will say this same thing. They will fall into this same trap. But what is actually happening is that as long as the fundamental elements of Bitcoin remain in place, as long as it remains sound money, as long as the protocol continues to work as the protocol works, and you can still run a full node and fully validate everything, it is a Trojan horse. It is going to let them think that they have control. They are going to think that they are benefiting from it, and it is going to undermine the very mechanisms and the imbalances in economic manipulation and control that has supported those sorts of institutions for so long. They have been propped up by those imbalances, by the asymmetry of authority in our current financial system. That asymmetry is falling away. Bitcoin immunizes against the asymmetry of financial power. It completely removes it. There is no authority in Bitcoin other than Bitcoin. It is FGU technology. It is freedom go up technology. And I love that this same thing is happening, and he mentions this in the article, Gladstein does, who, again, just a shout out to Bitcoin Magazine and Gladstein. So many great pieces recently. I mean, I think the last episode we did was Gladstein. That's all I seem to be reading lately. Oh no, two episodes ago, 526. Another major props to him for all these amazing pieces, in Bitcoin Magazine for having such a backlog that I don't think I'm really ever going to keep up at this point. I think I have been sufficiently outpublished in amazing articles than myself can create in audio. So for everybody who does have a little bit of time to read, you definitely need to go to Bitcoin Magazine. There's a lot of great stuff, specifically recently, that has just dropped. But back to the point that he made, he brought up the Lightning Network and Taproot and signature aggregation techniques. And this is where the nature of the data limit of the Bitcoin block size and the Bitcoin network, like the underlying protocol itself, is something that forces people to allocate as efficiently as possible the data that actually needs to go into the chain. And the data needed in order to undo everyone's privacy is explicitly a massive data hog. You know, we're talking about terabytes and petabytes of metadata and payment histories and all of this stuff that a lot of these companies are right now funneling and keeping histories of. Bitcoin cannot afford that. You know, if we just boost this thing to terabyte blocks, well, then all the on-chain data analytics just get better and better. And now we've got this endless open broadcast network with everybody's addresses and transactions and wallet histories and everything easily tied to each other, where the same analytics that they've been using continue to work and get better and better. And of course, it's only run on the five different data centers or major servers that can actually handle all of the data. Visa and Amazon and Google, and we know they're great about privacy and they love, you know, freedom and everything, and they would never sell our data to somebody else, right? Those are all the good guys. So the explicit nature of needing to be as efficient as possible with the Bitcoin data enforces people to use off-chain systems. Systems exactly like Lightning, which is an onion-routed payment system. It is fully encrypted end-to-end from sender to receiver. And exchanges and banks and payment services, Square and potentially PayPal and Strike, like these things are going to basically onboard everybody into a private, permissionless payment system on top of Bitcoin. And not because they want to push privacy, not because they think everybody has the right to onion-routed payments, but explicitly because that's how they are going to get cheap, efficient payments on top of Bitcoin. And the number go up technology in Bitcoin, the scarce asset that is secure and continues to grow and expand, is only going to be accessible through these private additional networks. And that is a huge, huge boost. You know, when privacy is a cost, when it is an extra cost, people don't go there and they won't take it. They won't pay that cost. You know, when privacy requires you to figure out what the hell a Tor browser is and requires that you, pay a little bit extra or the internet to move at 80% slower than the normal internet, people just don't do it. They just do the non-privacy option. The key to sustainable, broadly accepted or broadly adopted privacy measures is for it to be the more economical decision. If it saves you money rather than cost you money to be private, then you adopt the privacy measures simply because it's a good business strategy. And this is exactly the thing that something like Schnorr Signatures and Taproot and cross-input signature aggregation, the bunch of jargon, essentially the compression of a bunch of different people's keys into a single key. So that on the public blockchain, there's no distinction. You will see, basically you can split the ownership or you can split the signatures up of a single transaction that has, 100 inputs and 100 outputs, only ends up actually having a single signature. And you don't know how many different addresses are owned by how many different people. Maybe it's all one person consolidating a crap ton of UTXOs. Maybe it is literally 100 different people consolidating 100 different UTXOs together in order to save money. Maybe it's 200 people with 100 UTXOs, and they have each combined their individual signatures, their two signatures, into one because it's all a bunch of multisigs. It all looks the same. It becomes indistinguishable, and it is for cost-saving purposes, not for privacy purposes. I just actually had an episode, and I'll probably post this on my feed, actually, with Corey Tusick from Bitcoin Made Simple. We just kind of had an hour and a half discussion about Taproot and everything that's coming to Bitcoin, why it's a privacy and efficiency improvement and kind of all the different benefits involved. But a short version is that right now, when you write a transaction, you essentially have to broadcast and post onto the blockchain, onto the actual Bitcoin system, all the different instructions for how that specific coin or how that specific address can be redeemed. Now, depending on the format, you might publish that ahead of time, like the address that you send to might have all of those instructions, or you might use something like P2SH, which is the reverse. You send it to an address with a hash that's behind a hash, and then when you redeem it, they have to post all the instructions. But one way or the other, all of the instructions for how that, the script for redeeming it, which is a huge amount of data and obviously a privacy concern, has to be given to the Bitcoin blockchain. It has to be published publicly to do so. Taproot makes this private, makes it all behind the signature. So you can actually add additional pads to your Bitcoin transaction or additional backup clauses or a lawyer's keys just in case something goes wrong or a 2-year time lock and your wife's and your child's keys to unlock it as a inheritance plan that only happens if you aren't there and you aren't re-signing it every 2 years or something. And it's never visible. It's not publicly known to anyone that those new stipulations exist. And in fact, even better, because it's not visible, because it doesn't add any additional data, there's no reason not to do it. It doesn't cost you any more to add all of these additional clauses to the ownership of your Bitcoin. And maybe there's a way to always get it back if you lose your keys. Maybe there's always a way for your family to get it in the case that you suddenly aren't here anymore to take care of them. Maybe there's a way to redeem your coins if you get hacked using these three other keys that other people have, or a backup that you have stored somewhere, and that the hacker has 30 days waiting that you can actually redeem them. Suddenly all of this becomes possible, and none of it is an additional cost to your transaction. It is all hidden behind a single uniform signature. Even if it's just one address going to another address with a single key, or all of that complexity that I just talked about, they basically look identical. That is amazing. And not only that, it helps the very people that, like the corporates and the governments and the major institutions and the financial institutions that have business dealings that they want private. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to do those things. You know, if Apple made a huge agreement and put some $1 billion in escrow with Corning over a deal that was coming in a couple of months, but they didn't want it announced, if they did it right now on the blockchain, like on Bitcoin, everybody would know. Everybody could watch the blockchain and know Apple just entered into a deal, and then suddenly there'd be this flood of news way before they ever wanted to actually announce their product or let their competitors know that this was actually happening, that they were making a play to the tablet market, and no one was aware up until they saw that multi-sig on the blockchain come in with Corning and Apple. Taproot is the sort of technology that makes that possible for them to do and gives them the privacy that they expect in their financial system today, in their current arrangements and their banking systems and their financial systems that they are able to get, but that nobody else can afford, that nobody else gets the benefit of. And them adopting it, the fact that it is available for them to utilize, also means it's on an open permissionless network for anyone in the world to utilize. It is removing that financial privilege that they have and democratizing it to everyone. So if they want to get privacy on Bitcoin, they're going to have to adopt the technology that gives privacy to everyone. And again, this is just the beginning of all of this. Right? This is the first phase of making this happen. And at the end of the day, we are going to have so many additional technologies, and we're already obfuscating or obscuring away from the analytics, the on-chain analytics methods and the methodologies for tracking on-chain payments, and moving this into a whole nother sphere. So with the Lightning Network, now we're in a new unfamiliar space that new analytics and anti-privacy tools need to be built for. The old ones no longer apply, and I think we'll be constantly in that struggle. Now, after Lightning continues to exist for 4 years, 5 years, and it becomes more and more robust, and we watch it grow out and get large hubs or major companies involved, and we start arguing again about, there's a single point of failure because this company's too successful, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to go through the same things that we had with Ghash.io having too much hash power, and now rather than one pool, it's one country, and then maybe instead of one country, it will be one region, et cetera, et cetera. We'll always be complaining about some problem to decentralization. And Lightning will have those same battles. It will have those same two steps forward, one step back. And in a year or two, we'll probably be looking at a one step back for Lightning. Somebody will develop some anti-privacy tool or new form of analytics for the Lightning Network that will give them back 50% maybe of the capability of seeing payments and tracking transactions that they could do on the base chain. Maybe not even that much, but there will be numerous methods in order to piece together payments on Lightning. But what's funny is that we'll already be in the beginnings of rolling out the next thing. Like, for instance, PTLCs, rather than HTLCs, the point time lock contracts, are a different mechanism than the current way that we send Lightning Network payments. And they alone are going to add to privacy. And even before they have good analytics methods and good node positions to connect together all of the HTLC payments, not only could we very likely end up moving to the new method that makes it much, much harder to track it across nodes. Right now, basically, with the current method, there's a little tag that if you could see every single bounce, every single hop in the payment, well, then that little tag shows that the payment is the same. It's the same payment for every one of those hops. The difference for the new methodology, the PTLCs, is that every single hop has a unique tag. Then you combine that with the ability and the growing use of splitting up payments among many different channels, and you start losing the ability even to piece these things back together. Understand, both of those tools aren't actually explicitly about adding privacy. They're about adding functionality and reliability. Yet again, we have a situation where the thing that is economically aligned to give us better benefit and better functionality of Lightning Network also gives us better privacy. And at the end of the day, the cypherpunks are the ones writing the code. It's going to be a crazy, crazy battle. But the future is looking bright, and I'm so excited about this. I've been helping out a lot of people actually recently with setting up Lightning channels and starting to get feel for this and understanding what's going on behind the scenes. And I think a lot of it won't even be necessary, but I love learning about this stuff and like how it actually works. So feel free to DM me while I can actually manage my DMs reasonably well. If you want to onboard on Lightning, let me know if you need any help or some direction or have any questions. And I will be doing an episode very soon, published probably in the next couple of days, with Rolo and Slappy. Carr is joining us. I don't think Bird is going to be there. I can't remember who all is going to be there, but it's going to be a fun show. And I will link to it so you guys can check it out. We're going to be talking about Lightning game theory and all of this great stuff. So if you want to kind of dig further into that topic, that is literally what we're about to do a recording on. I'll probably be in it in about an hour or two. With that, let's go ahead and close this episode out. Bitcoin is a Trojan horse for freedom. Thanks to Alex Gladstein for the continuous amazing work, and Bitcoin Magazine for publishing so many incredible pieces. BitBox02 for the beautiful, ergonomically designed Bitcoin hardware wallet. And SwanBitcoin.com for the automated Bitcoin savings plan. They are the solutions for auto buying your Bitcoin on a regular basis and withdrawing to your safely stored Bitcoin keys. Check them both out at GuySwan.com. Last thing to mention is to check out Taproot.watch. Looks like we are going to get the Taproot software upgrade in this next difficulty adjustment. We are hitting at 90% approval, even though the blocks aren't hitting it yet. The pools have signaled and announced that they are upgrading. Some of them just are still have some nodes that they haven't quite upgraded yet. So not all of the blocks are signaling Taproot, but they have fully committed to doing so. And it looks like in the next difficulty adjustment, we are going to get Taproot locked into Bitcoin, and it will go live in early November. So keep an eye on that. Check out taproot.watch. As the ecosystem finally upgrades to an incredible efficiency and privacy boosting technology, and this is it. This is what Gladstein says. They're making this improvement not for moral reasons, but to improve their bottom line. This is Bitcoin's game theory, transforming greed into freedom. With that, I'll catch you guys next time on Bitcoin Audible. And until then, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you were listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.